Hi, I'm David Massover. Welcome to the Driving B2B Sales Revenue Podcast, where I'll be interviewing senior sales leaders, sales experts, and sales service providers about what else, what it takes to drive B2B sales revenue. So thanks for being here. Let's get started. Hey, welcome to the Driving B2B Sales Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, David Massover. Today, we have a great guest. We have Andrew Jellison, the Director of Sales and Business Development at Vodacall. Andrew, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
It's a pleasure. So let's open up with the traditional opening question for the podcast. You've been in sales for a bunch of decades, almost as long as I have, which is, you know, hard to believe, but true. So Throughout all of that time, what's the single best piece of sales advice that you've ever received?
Sure. So I think the best piece of advice I received was pretty early on as I started going down this career path. And really what it is focus on small daily achievable goals. And with a little bit of preparation the day before, setting your day up into two parts, whether it's the morning and then the afternoon, and then filling in daily tasks around that, calls, emails, content value, things like that. As long as you do those sorts of things, everything else takes care of itself. So really that's what I focus on. Honestly, every single day I say, okay, let's break it up into two different parts, morning and afternoon, fill those buckets up. And then as long as I do those two things and my efforts there, I know that everything else will take care of itself.
It's such a simple piece of advice, but it's so powerful, isn't it? I've had different points in my career where I've had kind of different ways of managing my time, but having those big things, you know, because the little stuff's going to come. Having those big things that you know you want to get done, I think if you're not deliberate about that, then it's very difficult to be proactive.
Totally. It's something that it does take a little bit of practice even to get into that methodology of saying, okay, I'm going to spend the last half hour of Monday to prepare for Tuesday, knowing that you're not actually doing anything productive on Monday anymore. That has proven to be just very helpful for me. So that way when I wake up on Tuesday, there's none of these small anxieties of what do I need to accomplish? What's the hard task? What's the easy task? It's already laid out for me. And then I just have to go out there and execute. And within sales, as you work on your craft, you get better at executing them. And then things just start to streamline from there.
I remember they used to have that old Army commercial. I don't know if they're still doing it anymore, but they used to have this old Army commercial. You know, we get more done, you know, by 7 a.m. than most people get done all day. And that always resonated with me as a sales pro, because if you start your day and you know what you got to get done, by the time 9 or 10 rolls around, there's, you know, other people in the office who are just getting warmed up or just checking their email and I already ate my big frog.
Right. Absolutely. I totally subscribe to that. I'm an early riser to begin with, but just that small preparation the day prior is super helpful.
I love it. That's right up my alley. Great advice. But you know, there's a lot of bad advice out there too, Andrew. What's some of the worst sales advice you ever heard?
There's not one that I would pinpoint and say, when you told me that, it was the worst thing I've ever heard. But generally speaking, just because I've been in the industry and I've got colleagues that have been in the industry for so long, what I see as bad advice or almost bad tactics is just a lack of game plan with not only your overall approach, but really every single thing that you do. So if I'm going to make a phone call to you and ask you for something, I want to know what's next and I want you to know what's next. And if that's not already decided beforehand, then you really have no process, you have no sales cycle, nobody knows where we're going with the conversation. So really having a game plan saying, if I'm going to pick up the phone and make this phone call, what do I want out of it? But maybe more importantly, this potential client or customer, what are they going to get out of this call? So I like to really think about that and have everything be purpose-driven. Whereas, sure, it's great to make 50 or 75 phone calls, but if you don't have any sort of focus and a game plan of what's that next step after that call, then I really think you could be wasting your time.
That's great, bad advice. Don't go in not having a game plan. I don't think you can ever really know what's going on the other side of a conversation. Right. It always feels to me when I'm approached by someone that way, it just feels more professional. Mm-hmm. Let's just agree what it is we're here to talk about. Right. Let's expectations set. Let's make sure that everybody's on the same page. And I remember when I first started using a CRM, I bought my own copy of ACT back in the 90s just because I wanted to be organized. And I remember developing this habit of knowing that when I hang up the phone, I needed to schedule something in my CRM. Mm-hmm. And it would be a lot better if I actually asked the person on the other end of the phone what that ought to be instead of just making it up on my own. And that, to me, that was a little thing that turned out to be a really big thing in terms of just keeping things moving forward.
Yeah. So when I have conversations with our team all the time, and it's just, again, back to the fundamentals of coaching, somebody will be all excited that they had a great conversation with a prospect. And I said, cool, what's the next step? I'm going to get them some information. Okay. Do they know that? Do they know when you're going to reach back out? Or is it going to be like you're starting all over again when you pick up that call and hope you may grab them for another few minutes of time? So the hardest part is to get that breakthrough. And then it should just be kind of process driven from there. So that's just something that we're constantly coaching up and making people aware of.
Yeah. And the flip side of that is it is so hard to get that breakthrough. Once you do, take care of it. You know, be deliberate about it and make sure that you are on purpose about what happens during that interaction and what's going to happen next. Otherwise, yeah, you find yourself scrambling around and not getting where you want to go.
For sure.
So you and I had a call before we recorded this episode. And for me, it was like a kid in a candy store because you, like me, I think we've already established that in this episode already. You're a bit of a process geek. And I say that with the greatest respect. Better than that, though, you are a bag-carrying sales leader, sales process geek. And the way that you articulated that when we spoke previously, the way that you iterate between your roles as a quota-carrying person, as a sales coach and as a sales leader, I think that's a really rich topic and I'd like to explore that if that's all right with you.
Absolutely. Works for me.
Cool. So before we do that, can you just give us a little bit of background about Vodacall just so that we have some context for the call?
Yeah. So Vodacall is a telecommunications company. So we focus strictly on business phone systems. To date, we've really been in the SMB to the mid-market range. So we're dealing with a lot of customers, whether they are five user law firm, all the way up to probably let's call it 500 users, somewhere thereabouts in that range. And we were established in 1999 prior to voice over IP and cloud phone systems taking off. So we're involved in traditional phone systems. And still today, we do have clients that use those sorts of phone systems. But really the trend and the overarching theme in telecommunications in general now is voice over IP and cloud-based phone systems. So that's where I spend the majority of my time. And that's really where a lot of our sales are going towards at this point.
And your role is director of sales and business development. That means a lot of different things at a lot of different places. What are some of the big pieces of that role?
Sure. So I break it up really almost into two silos. So I've got myself as a salesperson within that role and what that carries being with the organization for 17 years. And then on the other side, I have the management portion of it. So I run a team. I'm in charge of their day-to-day responsibilities and their overall annual revenue number that we all set forth as a group at the beginning of the year. And really what I try to do is drive efficiencies, streamline our process, create value for them to be able to go out and have the ammunition they need to increase their sales on a daily, weekly, monthly idea. And so that's kind of what I focus on, right? I've got half my world is management, coaching, but as you mentioned before, very much around process and metrics. And then the other half is I take all those things and I apply it to myself every single day and say, okay, how do I continue to move myself forward within the sales role itself?
So that's kind of a segue into really the question I wanted to dig into is how do those roles help each other? I mean, you kind of go from going out and executing to helping people execute to going out and executing. How do those two roles complement each other for you?
From a time perspective, it certainly is a balancing act, right? Because you can get lost. I personally think that if you're in sales, you like the idea of competing and you can gamify a lot of different things. So I have that sort of personality. And if I'm feeling the flow within my own personal sales, I could certainly get lost in that realm. And then vice versa, if I'm coaching and I'm feeling the flow in that, I could get lost in that realm. So I have to make sure that I do a lot of self-checks and balances, that I'm spreading my time equally. But in terms of how it helps, I think it helps tremendously because it's that idea that I'm actually hearing what other people are saying on the other end of the phone, as opposed to simply just you telling me, what are your prospects telling you? Or what's the feedback you're getting when we roll out this sort of campaign? Because the way that you're interpreting it could be different than the way that I might interpret it, right? So what I do is I try to apply my real life sales experiences, and then I use that as feedback with our group. And then collectively, we come up and say, okay, what do we need to change? What do we need to enhance? What do we need to kill? And then kind of go from there. I think it helps kind of both different ways, because also what it will do is it will give myself checks and balances on the sales side, because we can all learn from other people, right? So I'll look within our team and say, you know what? What they're doing right now, based on what's going on in the world, makes a lot of sense, and I hadn't thought about it that way. So then I apply that into my own sales role. So I like how it goes hand in hand. It's a bit of a juggling act, but for me, it works well.
Yeah, it is a bit of a juggling act. I know that for a lot of sales managers who sell, certainly for me, when I was balancing those two roles, there's this hunger that you have around an opportunity. You work so hard to create it. You always want to be very responsive to your prospects and your clients because that's your bread and butter. Right. And to also have to support the rest of the team, that is a tough balancing act. I think a lot of sales managers wind up veering a little bit too heavily towards the opportunity side because it's instinctive. How do you calibrate that? How do you make sure that you don't go off balance?
As an organization, you have to do a good job laying out, quite frankly, how the compensation works to make sure that you know where your roles and where your time needs to spend, why and how. And it has to be a balancing act where you say, okay, my effort spent coaching this team and getting them all up and running could work out for the whole of the business, for the other sales reps, and then obviously for myself as a sales manager. And then on the other side of that, from as a direct selling person, you have to make sure that that works out as well. So I think that kind of, you know, that's the ugly underlayer of a lot of these sorts of things. But once that's ironed out and everybody's clear and transparent as to what the role is and the vision is, then you can really look at problems in a different way. And I surprised myself on some of the, you know, the positive feelings that I would get by helping out the team. And it actually, a lot of times, trumps how you feel by getting your own opportunity, which is really neat seeing somebody else come up through the ranks and closing a deal that maybe they wouldn't have been able to close, but with assistance of, you know, myself, but other people within the organization, they're now learning their craft and then they're kind of off and running. So that was something that was kind of a learned skill and trial by fire on the job, but it's something that I'm really starting to get the benefits of just watching and seeing other people do that. And that's kind of how it works for us, at least.
I think that's one of the things that surprises a lot of new sales managers. From what I've seen, a lot of sales people get promoted to a sales manager role and they don't really know what it is, how it works, what it looks and feels like. They don't get much training. And in my mind, there's a huge difference between being the individual contributor and helping somebody else succeed as an individual contributor. It sounds like you're getting a lot of joy out of both these days.
Yeah. And of course, there's going to be drawbacks to each, as there are with any single role. But truly, what I try to do is focus on where those positives can come from and then how I can help contribute to increasing those positives. And then again, it just comes back to I'm always keep it simple, keep the fundamentals going. What I apply in my own world could help other people from a coaching perspective. And that's where things naturally just start to work and happen. And if everybody does good, it works out for everybody.
One of the first books that I read that really had an impact on me professionally was 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. And I remember so clearly the roles and the goals. You need to identify your roles and your goals and the big rocks. If you don't put your big rocks into the bucket first, you'll never fit them in. You told me about a similar planning process that you go through and why it helps you so much. Can you articulate that a little bit?
Sure. I mean, it comes back to kind of that best advice that I've gotten, and a little bit of preparation and small daily goals go a long way. But what I've always done is I try to end my previous day with setting myself up for success within that following day. And a lot of times that comes into place Sunday, right? So if I want to set myself up for the week properly, I just take a look at the next week. But I don't do it at Sunday night when everybody's wheels start turning, saying, okay, Monday morning, workday starting. I often do it on a Sunday morning, whereas there's no pressure, there's nobody else around. And I really say, okay, what are we looking to accomplish? We are in week 6 of this quarter. Where are we at? Where are our numbers at? What do we need to do to maybe nudge this group a little bit so we get to the number that we need to get to? Or are we in great shape here, but I need to focus my efforts somewhere else? So I try to do that and I come up with a couple of larger goals. And then from there, just break them down into smaller tasks. And it's not something new. It's not something that I came up with, certainly, but it's something that just works for myself. And I think that it spills over to everything else I do in the sense that I'm constantly trying to at least just deliver a value, right? If we're having a conversation, you're going to know what my value is that I'm trying to deliver cleanly, transparently. And then if it makes sense, we continue the conversation. If it doesn't make sense, well, we're certainly not going to waste each other's time anymore talking about it, right? And then we can move on from there. So I take that approach with a lot of different things. And for me, it's worked out kind of to date.
What time do you wake up in the morning?
Pre-pandemic, I woke up at 4:30, and that was to commute into Boston. Then I would try to get a workout in before getting into the office. Post-pandemic, now it's moved more towards like 5:45 or 6. So the commuting time, I'd like to say, has now gone into more work time, but really it's just gone into a little bit of a healthier sleep timetable, I would say.
Right, right. I ask because I'm also an early riser and I cherish my mornings. I protect my morning. It's that one time before the, you know, the family's running around and you got to get ready for everybody else's stuff. It's that time you can really sit down and just say, okay, what do I need to do today? What do I need to do this week? So I can absolutely relate to that. It's a great time if you're wired in a way that, that you can actually be functional at that time of day.
I totally agree. I get a lot done almost outside of the box thinking during that time, as opposed to just to-do lists. It's more about what are we trying to accomplish here? And then I can apply it to paper.
It's a dumb question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What do you think drives you the most? Being an effective salesperson, being an effective coach, being an effective sales leader? Is there one that you think you gravitate towards more than the others?
I think it's probably just the overall hunger to compete, quite frankly. You know, I wasn't blessed with an athletic background, so that I could only take that so far within high school and things of that nature. But I've always loved the idea of working hard and then measuring myself versus peers and colleagues and things like that. And it's not even from a financial perspective. It's more along the lines of what my effort and my output is, right? So something as simple as like the Peloton bike. We got that during the pandemic because I quit the gym. And those metrics that they provide for me are all I need because I know exactly where I am, but then I know where the rest of the world is. And that's going to make me go and continue to move further and higher as to whatever I want to do. That's really it. It's been, I could apply that to a lot of different things, but that's kind of how I'm wired and that's how I like to work. And for me, that's made sense.
As many people change in their roles within an organization or they go to a new organization, they wind up having to give up one role or another. You get high enough into leadership and all of a sudden frontline sales may or may not make sense in the same form that it used to. Can you imagine giving up some of these roles and focusing solely on some instead of the other? What would that look and feel like?
That's a great question because I had to give up a portion of what we sell on a daily basis probably about a year and a half ago because it just didn't make sense for me to continue to do that task if we were trying to think about different scaling tactics and things of that nature. And even giving up that piece took me a little while. So that's probably one of the drawbacks to my sort of mentality and the way that I'm wired because you always think, oh, I can just keep doing more and more and more. But then you're kind of sometimes missing the forest for the trees in that perspective. So I have put thought into that. And I think I've been getting a little bit better about trying to relinquish some of those smaller tasks to focus on larger tasks. And we'll continue to do that. But at the end of the day, I won't give up the individual ability to sell because that part of the job is not necessarily about numbers, but it's about just talking with people. And I just enjoy that so much. So I don't think I'll ever give that part of it up.
I talk to a lot of sales leaders who actively sell, and many of them feel the same way. Not only is it a way to tap into the pulse of what's really happening to stay sharp, but they also feel like it gives them a lot of credibility with the team. Is that something that you're feeling as well?
1,000%. I think that it's always been something that I feel deeply about, that you need to be able to apply what you're hearing, doing, to then teach about it. And as long as you're still within that time frame, it can still be applicable, right? If I had done some cold calling or cold emailing for 10 years, of course, I still have knowledge about, in general, what that should look and feel like. But overall, I think it has a lot more to do with market conditions, right? What are people saying now based on what's going on in the world? Are people planning on going back to the office or not? And how they're delivering that? Are they just saying it or, gosh, they never want to go back? So maybe does this business practice make more sense to them or less sense to them? So that's why I think that really, at least for me, it makes a lot of sense to get on the phone and speak with people. And then if you and I are colleagues, I could say, I know exactly what you're feeling, or you may be missing the boat a little bit because this is what I'm hearing on my end.
Yeah, it's a whole different kettle of fish, firsthand and secondhand.
I agree. Yep.
So if there are other sales leaders who are listening and they're struggling to balance the different roles that you've described or that they happen to be dealing with, which I think is ridiculously common. I think it's just very difficult to balance selling, managing the meetings, the metrics, the coaching. Something usually slips. What advice can you offer other than the time planning advice and other such advice that you've given already? But what other advice could you offer about being more effective in general and finding that balance when it can sometimes be so difficult?
Yeah, so I think it's kind of interesting, is especially when we're talking now, we're starting to run up against year end and people are doing their planning for the next year. And what happens is you say, okay, you had this quota, we're going to up it by 20%. And the first thing a salesperson does is they look at it and they're like, wow, how am I going to get to that number again? I just had a great year. Where do I start January 1 back at zero? So I'm constantly looking at ways to reverse engineer everything and say, okay, if we start here, don't think about this large number. Don't think about the 15 meetings that you're going to have. Think about what you need to do to be successful right now. And then will that, if you repeat it, start to chip away at some of those different things that you have? But then there's other parts of it, like we happen to have a certain amount of meetings in a given day, and I just know that sales aren't going to be part of that day. So instead of fighting it, which is what I used to do, I've given that day up to management. So I said, okay, this entire day, I'm going to be available. I'll do every meeting you want me to do. I'm going to purposely plan on my time and knowing that I'm basically out of the office. Think about it like a travel day, but it's more of just a management day. So that sort of idea has helped me internally. And I almost just try to turn off the sales portion of my brain for that day so I can just be just on management and coaching and helping and things like that.
It was one of the other principles in the Seven Habits was this idea of planning weekly. I remember it so clearly. I read it so long ago. I remember so clearly. A day is too short. A month is too long.
Right.
And if you can really just try to get your arms around your week, yeah, you could say, okay, you know what? Wednesday, I'm not going to sell, or Wednesday, I'm not going to do whatever.
Right.
I can make up for it on Tuesday, Thursday, or whatever. But yeah, if you're not deliberate about finding that balance, it can be very frustrating.
Yeah. You can get bummed out thinking about all the meetings that you're in. But if you know you're going to have to do it either way, you're better off just making a decision saying, okay, where am I going to be most effective before and after those meetings? Is it going to be try to scramble and speak to a few prospects? Probably not. You might be better served to say, okay, let's prepare for those meetings, make the meetings better, and then say, all right, next day, we're ready to go.
So we're kind of coming to the end of our time here, but I want to ask you kind of a more general question. What's one of the myths about sales management that you think is very common and that you'd like to push back against?
So I think in general, when you're part of the sales team, you may look at the sales management as saying, oh, well, how would you know you're not doing what we're doing, or we're applying all the work and then you're just kind of overseeing the numbers and the metrics and the process. And what I constantly try to reinforce to our group, because I'm very metrics driven and I have all the information, and it's not about saying, okay, you should make more calls or you should do more of these things, but it's rather saying, okay, if you're more effective in this bucket, let's figure out how we can hone that skill and drive more sales for yourself. Use the data more effectively so that way it's not micromanagement. You know, the idea behind these numbers could be micromanaging, but if the sales leader is doing it properly, it's giving you the tools saying, look, you're not a good right-handed batter. Switch to the left-handed side and watch how much better you are at that. So stop wasting time being a right-handed batter, things like that. That's kind of the one thing I'm constantly saying, is my whole goal as a sales manager is to coach and improve you. And of course, if the team does better, that's better for the entire organization. That goes without saying, but that's all companies. So that's how I hope to be looked at, and nothing more, nothing less.
It is a different perspective. I think many people look at management and many people look at their managers as they're trying to fit me into this set of numbers, as opposed to, I used to be a big bicyclist. I was a big fan of Lance Armstrong, you know, well before he was disgraced. And I had a saying of his written on my wall, and it was ride your strengths and train your weaknesses. And then it sounds like that's part of your management, your coaching philosophy.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's really something, whereas if you can identify where people are, you can identify where they're great at, but then you can also identify and help coach up where they need that. So that's what we look for within the numbers. And that's hard to communicate sometimes because people are constantly looking at numbers. But for us, it started to work very well when we enacted that probably 5 or 6 years ago.
So it's really a question of not what are the numbers, but what are the numbers telling me and what should I do
exactly
about
right.
it? Exactly
right. Yep. Because in a snapshot, the numbers mean nothing.
Yeah.
Right. It's more on the lines of what's now related to what we're doing or what we're looking to do.
Yeah. It's the start of the thought process, not the end of the accountability process or the beginning of the accountability process. Yeah.
We have a lot of those different boards that other sales group use. So you can constantly see what's going on and you can see where you line up, but we never send out numbers just blindly. So everything we talk about is say, okay, here's the numbers, but this is what we're going to talk about and this is why. And so that way everybody has an understanding saying, okay, well, why were we here and what's the adjustment? Person A did it this way. Were they more effective doing it that way? Yes or no? And then we just kind of go from there.
A facilitator of an intelligent conversation. Good way to use data.
Absolutely. I agree.
This has been a great conversation, Andrew. Really appreciate you spending time with us here on the podcast. If people want to find you or connect with you or reach out to you, where's the best place to do that?
Best place is probably right through LinkedIn. I'm still a big believer of that as a source for business. So I'm happy to chat with anybody about anything. And I appreciate you inviting me onto the podcast. I know it's been successful and I'm sure it will continue to be.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you as a guest. Thank you very much. I'll put your contact information in the episode notes. And it's December, so happy holidays and happy new year.
You as well. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Andrew.
You've been listening to the Driving B2B Sales Revenue Podcast with your host, me, David Massover. If you'd like to learn more about how I can help you and your sales organization accelerate growth, or if you'd like to be a guest on the show, reach out to me at davidmassover.com or find me on LinkedIn. Please rate and subscribe to the podcast to be the first to know about new episodes, and thanks for listening. Now, let's go drive some B2B sales revenue.